This is Edith Nagyak being interviewed by Louise Farquharson on the 4th of November 2005. Interview taking place at number 5, Walsh Hall, and the whole interview will be on site A. Okay, so is it okay to just talk about just what you think are the most important aspects of Inupiaq life and culture? You know, something, what you think most represents, like, the culture, Inupiaq, yeah,
people. The spiritual essence of our Inupiaq culture is whaling, of course, which is very sacred to the Inupiaq, and the whale gives itself to us, and also the values that we have learned. I was just discussing that discipline and that we had in growing up. And I think the moral, the right way of life was already implanted. It was, children learn what they live, because we saw the honesty and not stealing and take care of the poor and give to the poor, you don't be stingy.
Respect, have a good spirit.
Yeah, respect somebody else's property. Mm-hmm. That's not yours. If it's somebody else's, go return it if you find it, whatever. It's just the moral way of living.
And most people live by those rules.
A long time ago, even before Christianity came, that's what we were living in harmony,
yeah,
working hard and taking care of the poor and sharing and working hard, hunting, chopping ice, chopping wood, walking to go hunting, walk up to get caribou, walk down to go get the seal, the buried seal, make the skin boat out of the buried seal. There was a lot of activity.
Mm. Like you're saying, if all the oil runs out and we have no electricity, like it's important to know how to live. Like,
yes.
If everything.
Yes. We lived.
And that's how you did.
We lived before electricity, we lived before the natural gas, so we knew how to make fire, and we knew how to feed ourselves.
And be sustainable, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And use the environment without...
Without wood. We made sod houses to live in, the most energy efficient houses made out of the ground, the sod.
They're like below the surface of the...
No, they were made from blocks of ground.
Right.
Sod. We call them sod houses.
Mm-hmm.
And you put these blocks of ground on top of each other around, and pretty soon it'll be a full house. I mean, you know, it'll be a house.
So do the walls freeze in the winter?
Outside, yes.
Yeah.
It was pretty warm inside.
Yeah.
And a long time ago, even before that, I think they did find an area where they could dig in and put bones, whale bones, around it so that it wouldn't fall.
Whale bones?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've seen some in Point Hope where they used whale bones to keep it up, you know.
So, apart from whaling, what other activities like bring people together in the community?
There was the messenger, feast. There have been stories of people wanting to trade, you know. I'll give you berries if you give me seal oil, you know, that type of trading. Or if you give me wolverine, I'll give you deer skin. Or I'll give you dried caribou meat if you give me quail, you know,
trading.
Yeah, I think that's, but there is a story in regards to the Kiveret. It was revived in 1988 by the Oslo Borough mayor, then George Amawaken. He instructed his staff to start it, and Rex Okakuk was the main person who got everybody together, informed everybody through plane to each village, and this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to revive the messenger feast, and please bring your dancers, Eskimo dancers, and that's how it was revived. So we do it every 3 years.
Yeah. And well, there's a big,
gathering.
And gathering with lots of dancing.
At home in Barrow, the Eskimo dancers come in. There's a lot of Eskimo dancing, even way far from Russia. The Siberian Eskimos come in.
Oh wow!
Eskimo dance.
Wow!
And from Canada, Akhlaq.
Are there very similar? Like, are there lots of similarities between the cultures of the Eskimos in Canada and Russia and Alaska?
Yes, I believe they still live out their land, and they still maintain their dances. That's very important in a culture to maintain your dance. And we've been hunting as long as I can remember. It's in our culture. The Inupiaq were made to live there, to kill the wolverine, the wolf, to clothe themselves, the caribou. And it was very strange when they started saying fur was no good. In Lower 48, remember?
Yeah.
They started throwing oil or whatever they want when people were wearing fur.
Yeah. That's because, I mean, I guess in the Lower 48 they need to wear fur, but in Barrow you do to survive.
It was essential.
Yeah.
So we were made to wear those to keep us warm because it's very cold, harsh winters. And we eat the frozen caribou, frozen fish. We ferment walrus and whale meat, and it's really good. It's very good.
I was watching this program one time about a caribou and how it's right, but like in the, underneath the skin there's parasites which live like little parasites which live underneath the skin of the caribou that you can eat as well.
Yes, kumaks. We ate those.
They good?
I was small. Yeah, I remember eating those.
So, you don't think that the Inupiaq culture has started to kind of be lost or forgotten?
It's not lost.
It's still going strong.
Yes, yeah. We still hunt, and we're bringing back the language.
So that was when the missionary.
It's in the school. Yeah.
So the language is probably the thing which was most damaged by the missionaries coming.
Not particularly when missionaries came in, it's when we were boarded out to school. To Wrangell, to Manichcom.
Mm.
We got used to talking in English, and that's when we came home and we did understand, we started talking in English.
Mm.
And 9 months out of the year that we were in school, summertime we would go home. So imagine us being there most of the time in 4 years of high school, away from home.
Yeah.
That's when it was effective.
Mm.
And that's when we started talking in English, and when we were raising our children, that's what we did. We talked to them in English. But there's curriculum. Anybody can learn our language. And the goal for all of us, I think, for the Inupiaqs is to, okay, here's a book. If you want to learn, here's the first year grammar.
Hmm.
And here's the dictionary.
So can you say something in Inupiaq now for me? Hello, my name is Edith.
Edith Nayak, Nayak Goya Gurua. Lisadu Silva. Inupiatu Kiva. Ukak Tukra Walak to Ilokata. Then the Tanik to Nokangayota. Ilichi Rumout to Talwood. Inupia Lassi Rumout. Ukati Louis Inupiat.
What's that? One day. Someone wants to say that. And I have to translate.
I said something about we have to teach our grandchildren how to talk in our language.
Mm.
We have to continue to talk in our language so that they can learn.
Yeah, I mean, so... Yeah, we haven't really spoken much in class about your life. It's been more about specific, you know, you've been talking about whaling medicine. But I thought maybe it'd be nice to talk about your memories of your childhood a little bit, and like your mother and your father, and like your happiest memories of when you were younger.
The happiest memories that I can remember was when I had this beautiful green with red checkered plaid, red and green dress, satin dress I had. I felt like the prettiest little girl in the world. That was my happiest memories. I remember going to the Christmas feast and feeling so good, and I just cherish that dress. And another thing, Uncle George had given me for a Christmas present a big doll, one of those hard, big size dolls with a hat, a dress, a coat, a handbag, shoes. I thought that was the happiest days of my life when I received that Christmas gift from him.
So how old were you then?
Less than 8.
So did you ever go...
Probably 4 or 5 years old.
So when you were younger, did your uncle and your father take you out, like, when you went hunting at all? Or?
Uncle Perry did. It was beautiful outside, sun shining in April, and him making a squirrel and feeding a squirrel. That was a memorable moment. I remember that. And there's some funny stories too, but they're from my siblings. Yeah, we grew up playing in that big ship. That was a good memory. But it was dark, and we'd explore in this big ship, and it's just like, you know how kids are. You just explore, even though it's dark. You just like look around and play in there, and and going there and going fishing.
So, when you were younger, that did you have any games that you played, or that like in any Inupiaq like games, or like board games, or anything?
Napatchak. It was something that sharp, a sharp object, like they made it out of wood. It has a wooden handle, a wooden handle, and then attached to it is a nail, sharpened nail. And we go, and there's a board where it could land. And you do this, and you do that. And
up your head and your shoulder.
any which way you could. And if it doesn't land, then it's somebody else's turn.
Ah, and there's more different points for different areas of the board, or different?
No.
No, just.
It's just that. You keep, it keep landing, you keep playing.
Yeah.
It keep landing, and if it doesn't land like this, it's somebody else. Somebody else's turn.
Did you play that with your brothers and sisters?
Huh?
Did you play that with your brothers and sisters then?
I remember seeing it being played. And I think I played that too, I'm not sure. It was a sharp object.
Has that been passed on to your children and
grandchildren?
No.
Because of the fact that it's a sharp object.
Yeah.
I think that's why.
Yeah.
It wasn't played. But Manna Manna.
How did you spell the first one?
Napatchak?
Yeah.
Na N A Napat 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 N A P A T C H A K Napatchak. Napatchak.
That sounds like good fun.
Yeah.
Are there any other games like that?
Manna Manna. Yeah, there's the object of the game is there's two sides, two equal sides of people playing, and we make a circle on each side on the sand or ground or whatever. And the object of the game is to try and go around their circle. And if they tag you, there's these anaraviks. We call them anaraviks, but they're like prison. You go in there. This is the prison for this opponent team, and this is a prison for this team. So this opposing team try and take you out of the
prison
by tagging you, and then you go back and start all over again and try to go around this. So the winner would be the one. Well, anyway, the loser will be the one with all the people in here, in the prison. So, Manna Manna and, what is that called? I remember playing Elephant Hide in Barrow. We moved when I was about 8 years old from Kaktoli to Barrow. So, we played Elephant Hide. That's hide and seek. I remember trading parkas with somebody so that they won't recognize us or whatever we done.
I think I've done that kind of thing.
Yeah, and what's that game where you have your hands tied together? I'm not tied, but so the person would go through. Pom Pom Pull Away was the name of that. we'd be holding our hands. There'd be two sides, one over there, and how many feet away? Like, I don't know. We used to play it by the church. Pom Pom Pull Away, and the object of the game is for that child to try and go through the barrier.
Yeah.
With their hands.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I forgot how. Was he supposed to, I think, go back over there? And if you don't make it, then they claim you. Yeah, they claim you.
And then you're on their side.
And then you're on that side, yeah. Yeah. The object of the game is to go through that barrier somehow. You hold your hands really tight so that they won't be able to go through.
I'm guessing you play these games in the summer, in the winter.
Winter too.
Winter too.
Yeah, winter too.
So, and you know, you were talking about storytelling a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Did people tell in the winter when there are lots of, you know, evenings where people would sit around and tell stories, or like your family?
Our dad was a good storyteller. I mean, some visitors come into the house and they start telling stories. Yeah, and the reason why I remember that story was our mom, I think, had told us so many times over and over that story, that it's a family story. I remember it.
So did your dad make up new stories? Or was it normally stories, like traditional tales?
What do you mean new stories? I don't know.
Did he create stories himself? Or did he tell you stories that were passed
it's,
on?
It's handed down.
Right, yeah.
You hear it from somebody and then you hand it down.
Mm.
I've never known of anybody creating stories, composing stories, but only in Eskimo dances. They compose stories when they drum Eskimo dance, and they compose stories, or they compose a fun dance. However they want to compose it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that.
Okay.
That was a nice and
you're
informative.
Welcome.
And look forward to next week.
Okay.
Yeah.